You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Zero. We win. A really inspired performance from the U.S. They were the better team. They honestly deserved all 3 points. Maybe you're going to wish you had all 3 points come that match with Iran. But, Whitty, your initial takeaway from this really memorable match to the American and maybe to the English, to the neutral?
Yeah, I was asking you, was that a good game? But
it was dramatic.
It felt good to me because I thought for the first 70 minutes, the U.S. were incredibly competitive. You can argue they were the better team. And then I think went into survival mode. They didn't really create a ton. They were trying to play direct, which is one of the things that you love. There was a good chance that came from it that unfortunately the U.S. didn't put away. But the feeling at the end of that for me is I went into the game thinking that this could potentially get ugly for the U.S. It wasn't. As a matter of fact, it was a good performance. You could argue the U.S. were the better team. And that feels great coming from a perspective of going into this World Cup thinking maybe there's disaster on the way.
Yeah, I certainly didn't anticipate going into this match thinking that the U.S. would come out better than the English. The English more talented, but this is the investment that the U.S. has made in this national team, the development of these players. I saw people taking pot shots at the Premier League because of the English performance. Then I realized, you're taking pot shots at the Premier League, that's half the U.S. team.
You're taking pot shots at us, too.
Tyler Adams, that is a lead by example, captain performance. You know, in baseball, they have that cliche for the Yankees. They earn their pinstripes in that moment. Tyler Adams, I thought today, with his leadership on the pitch, his amazing stamina, his demeanor, you see why he is the pick for captain.
You would say he earned his stars and stripes then.
Oh, wow, look at you. We're podcasters.
Tyler Adams was sensational because ultimately this game requires a certain amount of endeavor, a certain amount of knowing when to put out fires. And that's Tyler Adams' job. He's not brilliant going forward. He is a brilliant defensive player. He knows how to read the game. He knows positionally where to cover for players that go. Anthony Robinson, the U.S. left back, loves to go forward. The three in midfield, two of them in front of him like to go. Where are the gaps? He always seems to be in the right place. We saw a moment late where Jack Grealish looked like he was away.
Yeah, he was good.
Right, he was good coming off the bench. But Adams sort of shows him to the sideline, eventually gets the help of Shaq Moore. You put in the foul, you give away a free kick, you defend the free kick, and you see out the result. Those are the sorts of moments where they don't show up on the stat sheet, but I hope people who watch the game recognize just how good the U.S. captain was.
Historically, when you talk about Americans in the Premier League, you talk about Fulham Football Club.
Yeah.
And the Fulham players really showed up today, Whitty.
Yeah, I thought England were able to find some spaces in that channel down the left side early with Bukayo Saka, but they were always there to put out the fire. Tim Ream, who's a player, we cannot stress, and we talked about pregame narratives with Haji Wright. Tim Ream was a player when he stepped on the field for the U.S., it was, oh my God, Tim Ream is going to play for the U.S.
This
is a disaster.
I thought personally entering this game, his lack of pace was a big liability.
Yeah.
Didn't rear its head one bit.
Well, and also, we were concerned about yellow cards pregame. None of the players that were on yellow cards picked up one.
No.
They handled themselves very well.
Ballsy from Greg Berhalter, the approach worked out. McKinney, very clearly not himself.
Yeah.
Certainly, as the game went on, became lesser and lesser of the player we've come to recognize. Although he had some good moments of control, was pretty ambitious, especially late in that game with that pass to Christian Pulisic in the box. Yeah. Can't really expect Christian to do much. Let's talk about Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
Because, for better or worse, the criticism sometimes of Christian Pulisic is maybe he tries to do too much when he's wearing the national team shirt. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. For me, Christian Pulisic has always understood the assignment, and he's always risen up to a certain level of effort, and you cannot fault him for that. Sometimes it looks like it's counterproductive. Today was a day that it certainly worked, Woody.
Yeah, and he sort of recognized, like you said, the moments where he had to take over and where his sort of skill and flair. There's five or six moments in the game where there was one moment where the U.S. are playing out of trouble. Anthony Robinson is carrying the ball towards the middle, and he sort of pings the ball with some real pace at Pulisic. And most U.S. players, that's touch
ever.
It goes flying. Most, it goes 10 yards flying the wrong way. England are in transition, and they're in. Pulisic handles it with the quality touch that really defines good soccer players.
Yeah.
When you can handle the ball with your first touch, he did it. And that sort of encapsulated overall what I thought was a great performance from him. Getting into attacking positions and knowing the way to come central and try and work in traffic and play 1-2s, but also as a winger running at his fullback. I thought he was sensational today, despite ultimately the end-to-end product.
Revisiting what I said a couple of minutes ago about the investment the national team has made in these players and them going abroad, and some of the cliches about American players dissipating. The U.S. was so calm on the ball today.
Yeah.
Moments at previous U.S. teams would be very nervy. They showed such calm, such poise on the ball today that moments that I would really sweat with previous incarnations of this team were nothing to be concerned about, Woody.
And you know that England are a team of players that for their clubs, they all press. Every single one of them. They know how to defend from the front. And so when Tim Ream, who, by the way, is not necessarily emblematic of generational change, he's emblematic of, he's a good player with the ball at his feet.
Yeah, he's been ahead of his time.
Correct. Right, and so he receives the ball and sort of takes two touches to get around a defender. Normally, Tim Ream taking a player on, I think I'm still sweating as a result of that moment. But I think the other moment was Matt Turner in goal. Because when he played for Bruce Arena in New England, again, sensational goalkeeper, can make all the saves, but was not necessarily a player you trusted with his feet. And also, he was not asked to do anything with his feet. And he recognized that he needed to improve there in order to win the trust of Greg Berhalter. So he got to move to Arsenal in the Premier League. Yes, he's a backup, but I think he wasn't there long enough where his lack of game time hurt him. Instead, training every day in an environment where you're asked to play with your feet was effective for him.
I'm hoping they're still taking applications for the Ream team.
Yeah.
I think we can be two charter members, although I don't think you can be a charter member with as much banter as we've had at Tim Ream's expense, but credit to him. Like I said, ahead of his time, if Tim Ream factored into the U.S. team, and I know he was a source of great frustration while he was playing, but even a source of great frustration when he wasn't playing about 12 years ago, people maybe saw this evolution of the game coming. He's a tremendous player, a player that you can trust. Obviously, for Fulham Club, Football Club, he's pretty much a legend.
Yeah, he's a cult hero at that club, and he's been there for so long representing Americans, and again, it's that skill that worked. So the narrative on him was it works in the second division of English soccer called the Championship. It didn't work when he went to the Premier League. And Fulham and their fans were pretty scared entering this season. Oh, we're going with Ream again. This has happened twice and it didn't work. But the third time it's worked, and that's the form that's allowed him to make his way back into the U.S. team. He did not earn his way back into the U.S. team with the way that he played for the U.S. He earned it on the way he played for Fulham, and he's showing those traits without any of the weaknesses that we've seen previously. I think it's been a stroke of genius from Berhalter to trust him.
I guess the man of the match pick would determine on what color shirt you're wearing today. If you're English, you might think Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
Let's give him some credit. We're giving Tim Ream credit, and we're giving Harry Maguire credit.
What world are we living in?
He's better for the national team.
Yeah.
You were telling me it's because the pace internationally is slower. It's more suited to his skill set. But the U.S. was not playing slow.
Right.
They were playing pretty quick. and he was up to the challenge. They tested him quite a bit, and we're not for Harry Kane. Maybe one of them goes in the back of the net, especially off one of those corners that Christian Pulisic was actually good on.
Yes,
today.
I criticized him pregame. He answered those criticisms. He was great on set pieces, but time after time, Harry Maguire denied the U.S. chances. There was one, I think it was either McKennie or Zimmerman, that was lining up a header, that free header, back post, goalkeeper would have had no chance, but uprises Harry Maguire. And the reason I say that the tempo is slower is because in the Premier League, you see fewer moments where the game sort of comes to a standstill. We saw probably 8 or 9 times today, the game sort of become walking pace. It hasn't really happened week in, week out in the Premier League. It's the quickest league in the world. It's why it's such a great entertainment product. At international level, the game kind of slows. You can sort of be switched on and focused the entire time. And he did not make a single mistake, which are not the kind of performances that he walked into this World Cup putting in.
All right, now let's look ahead.
Yeah.
U.S. gets a draw. The only result really of consequence would have been a U.S. win.
Yeah.
Didn't get that victory, but certainly a moral victory, and the U.S. knows they can play with pretty much anybody in this tournament because England are a spectacular team. They got their number, man. The U.S. has
England's the U.S. remained
number.
Undefeated against England at the World Cup. Yeah. 1950, 2010, 2022. 3 games, 1 win, 2 draws for the U.S. against England.
In a World Cup that's been pretty difficult to predict, we enter now for the U.S. a scenario where it is win and in. And you look back to the past for any historical indicators for what may come, and I'm at my wit's end. Could it be 2006?
Yeah.
Could it be 2010? Could it be 1998 where Iran devastated you and put the final nail in your coffin?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm not really sure what to expect entering Tuesday. I respect that football team. They're stingy. They've been impacted by suspension entering that third match. It's going to be tough for them to score on Iran.
Yeah.
They're going to need to score on Iran. And Iran is going to enter that game even stingier than we've grown accustomed to. You were kind of hoping, considering how that first match went for Iran, maybe they check out, considering everything that's happening in their country. Now they are a source of pride. The country is rallying around them. Can they deliver a hugely embarrassing loss to the U.S.? God knows how that's going to be propagandized in that country if they can do it. I am officially concerned about that matchup with Iran.
Right, and I'm sort of not glad, but it's sort of a good reminder today that Iran, against Wales, didn't sit back and defend. They played with them, and they were good.
They were a better team by a healthy amount, just like the U.S. was today.
Correct,
by the way.
And like they were at times on Monday. So Iran, I'm glad they sort of reminded the U.S. this isn't them packing it in. This isn't going to be easy. It's going to be really hard. We know that their manager, Carlos Queiroz, is a coach who likes to pack it in, who likes to defend. My guess is he's going to play for the nil-nil and try and frustrate the U.S. But they have a couple of good forwards. They have a couple of ways to beat the U.S. And so I think that their result today was obviously great for them. It was a surprise. We should add, though, as much as Iran were the better team over the course of the game flipped when Wales had a player red carded. Their goalkeeper, Wayne Hennessy, came out and took out an Iran player with a heinous challenge. And I think as a result, you sort of get the feeling that Iran might have gone nil-nil all the way to the wire there. They're still not an incredibly potent attacking team. The question is, can the U.S. find a way through, and how do you adjust? I think the U.S. expected probably a bit more 50-50. In this game, probably a 40-60 kind of game where you're the underdog. When you have to be, as they say in South America, the protagonist in a game, how do you change up? Do they change personnel? Do they change system, recognizing they've got to break down a bunkered defense, and that's not always been the U.S.'s strength?
I charged you up. I charged the audience up by embracing that underdog mentality, and there's just something about that role that we saw the U.S. enter into that they absolutely relish. For whatever reason, doesn't matter the players that don the shirt, they really live for that underdog role. Entering that game with Iran, they are not the underdog.
No.
They are the favorite. Greg Berhalter is not this cult of personality. It's easy to find the motivation against England for several reasons in the World Cup. That was super inspired, considering the fact that that game was of really zero consequence. How does Greg Berhalter use what we saw today because there is a true letdown spot. Yeah. I think, even though they're trailing Iran in the table, there is a potential letdown spot here for the U.S. Do not feel yourselves. Iran is good. They are top 20 FIFA ranked, Chris.
Yeah, it's a team that, you know, the U.S., I think, might not necessarily, I mean, it can't be a letdown spot. It's the final game of the group stage. It's a take them lightly spot.
Well, I think for the casual observers,
right,
the people that tune in every four years, in our case,
most
every
of the
8 years.
People that are here, frankly, yeah, that are here for a party.
Flat track against Iran. Not at all the case.
Right. And by the way, the odds on DraftKings Sportsbook, the U.S. are minus 110 to win. Iran is plus 310. The draw is plus 260. So the U.S. are favorites going into that game.
Favorite. Very slight favorites.
Yeah.
To advance out of the group, Wales lays an egg. Their keeper is out for this game against England. You got to write them off. It all comes down to, if this were on NBC Sunday Night Football, that game gets flexed. So let's talk a little bit now that we can breathe. The U.S., we know the scenarios. There were other matches today.
Yeah.
I want to give a round of applause to Ecuador.
Yeah.
Ecuador, I thought, were phenomenal. They have been this entire tournament. And with that first match, maybe we say, it's Qatar. But today, against a class opponent that many people are earmarking as perhaps a dark horse in this tournament. Within the first 15 minutes, Netherlands, class. Outside of that,
yeah,
Ecuador, far superior. You gotta like their chances to advance out of this group. Really impressed with what we saw from Ecuador.
Completely agree, and it's sort of the two teams that were favored to finish behind the Netherlands, Ecuador and Senegal in the final group game. And I have to be honest, on what we've seen, I think Ecuador are better. I think Ecuador are gonna get through, and you're right to sort of highlight the aspect of, yeah, the Netherlands are on paper the better team. We saw a great goal from Cody Gakpo to open the scoring, and they've got some of those top talents. You're going at Virgil van Dijk with, you know, in midfield. You have Moises Caicedo, who's played well for Brighton, but next to him is Sebastian Mendes, who couldn't start for LAFC in MLS. So this is a team that is not necessarily comprised of top, top talent, but as a collective, they're sensational. And they don't play the role of underdog. I understand that a lot of teams, you know, you have to be solid defensively. You can't show up at a World Cup and be completely open. But even still, the U.S. or Ecuador was able to play their game, play with the ball, and create chances. And they honestly probably should have won this game. Now, the one concern is that Ener Valencia came off in the 90th minute on a stretcher. Reportedly, he'll be okay, but that's a real concern heading into their final group game. But you can't help but be massively impressed by what they did today.
With history as your reference, this Dutch team's a little difficult to recognize.
Yeah.
Not the names you're used to and not the style of play. We haven't seen that beautiful Dutch style yet.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get concerned for a team that I thought after the first match was certainly worthy of that dark horse mantle. Now, a little bit concerned. Very uninspired.
Yeah.
Lack of creativity. Frankie De Jong is on that. You all right? You're still shaky. You're experiencing that game was kind of weird because you were super nervous. Hard in your throat.
I was super nervous. Yeah.
The entire time.
But you relish this.
Yeah.
This is your thing.
This is where I get up
right,
for this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But also,
I'm just getting warmed up. I love this.
I know, but normally when you're behind the ball in the 70th minute, and you're trying to defend, I hate that. And for whatever reason, you seem comfortable. Where do you find this comfort from? I don't understand.
Lipitor. Generally. Edouard Mendy actually looked really good today.
Yeah.
A nice all. I know he let one in. Nothing he can do about that one. Great to see this player who has a great story, immensely likable. There was talk, I saw on Twitter, there was talk about him possibly being moved to the reserves. Actually made some big time saves for Senegal. So that matchup, obviously, winner comes out of that group, is immense. The Dutch, we'll see what happens. I think most people think that they're certainly obviously going to be getting to the knockout stages. We assume Qatar, the first team out, right? But if they're going to have a deep run, they need to find some sort of creativity. It can't all be on De Jong. Gakpo is certainly a player linked to United, probably going to be making a move to a bigger club, but they need something. This isn't, Schneider's not going to bail you out.
Yeah.
Ruud van Nistelrooy is not going to bail you out. Memphis, I know when he's on form, he's a very threatening player. Maybe fool's gold, considering that he ascended on a glamour club that wasn't the glamour club that we came used to if you paid very close attention. They're missing that talisman.
Yeah.
I really think that this team is missing that special number 10. De Jong, even though he's good in the national shirt, not quite it.
Yeah, I think if you look at, I mean, Virgil van Dijk is their defensive talisman, but you're right. They haven't, since Van Nistelrooy, since Snyder, really created that star attacking player.
Yeah, and there's been Percy.
So many, right, there's been some, right. There's been so many promising players that looked like they were going to get there, but they ended up not coming through. I remember Davy Klaassen being one of them who's still running around out there for the Netherlands. But up front, it's not impressive. It's Koop Meiners, it's Depay, it's Berghaus and Bergwijn, and a lot of guys that have not exactly been star players at their clubs. And so they're relying on an overall team formula to get them through. One that, frankly, is kind of boring right now. It's not one that's creating a ton of chances. However, you mentioned the play of Edouard Mendy in Senegal. I will take the chance to really relish in the fact that the first team that has been eliminated from the 2022 FIFA World Cup is the host nation, Qatar.
Yeah!
Their campaign only lasted 6 days. They waited 12 years for the World Cup. They spent reportedly $220 billion, and they're out after 6 days. I take absolutely no pleasure in that.
The moralities aren't the only thing that are abhorrent about Qatar. Their football team appears to be so as well. We didn't get to break down the games yesterday. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody in the United States watching along. Let's talk about Ronaldo.
Yeah.
As a player for the Dramatic, obviously. The weight of the world on his shoulders for that pen. Takes it calmly. If he missed it, I would not want it to have been Cristiano Ronaldo. But Portugal, some decent attackers, obviously. A really good team. What'd you take away from Portugal's performance?
So for me, Ronaldo, it's a good shout because the one thing that we know about him is that he's incredibly comfortable over penalties. He'll probably go down as one of the greatest ever penalty takers. He took that one with real power. I don't think he influenced the game a ton. I actually think a previous version of Ronaldo could have had a hat trick on the day. He had some really good chances, but as much as he keeps himself in great shape, he's not very sharp right now. The Manchester United thing hurt with the inability to play games week in, week out. And I think you saw when they made some changes and brought on Rafael Leao in particular,
yeah.
What incredible form
what
he
a
is.
Player.
What a player he is. He yeah. plays for AC Milan, who's been very good in Italy, but I think he was going to be one of the players that sort of announced himself on this stage, and he was sensational in the game. That being said, the Ghanaians had their chances to get back into the game, and it was nearly one of the greatest finales of a World Cup match we've ever seen, with the Portuguese goalkeeper rolling the ball out, and then Iñaki Williams, their striker, sort of was lurking behind, took it off him, but slipped. And holy hell, that would have been one of the coolest moments we've seen at a World Cup. But a good win for Portugal to sort of calm things down early days here at the World Cup.
It was almost a gap for all time. Let's change our focus a little bit to tomorrow's slate. Argentina, the biggest upset arguably in World Cup history. They play Mexico in a must-win match
yeah.
for the Argentinians. What Leo Messi are we going to see? Will this Argentinian team rise up to the challenge, answer the call the way that Spain did after losing to Switzerland a couple World Cups ago and made a run to an eventual championship? Or will they crumble like they've been one to do yeah. lately? Luckily for them, they're encountering a Mexican team that's far from the best we've seen in the World Cup.
Yeah, and that for me is the reason why I'm not going to panic about the opening game performance. I think there was something specific about the way that Saudi Arabia played that was the reason why the U.S., or rather Argentina, wasn't able to win that game and ultimately hang on to the result. I still trust in them to at least get out of this group. I don't think that, like, I think maybe that game proved that they could have been a little overvalued coming into the World Cup. I'm not exactly a huge believer in them, but they're good enough to get out of this group, and I just don't think Mexico have enough about them to really do a job on them. I think ultimately they're going to end this game without a goal. Argentina, even if it's not a sensational attacking performance, I think it'll be 1-2 to the Argentinians, and they can sort of calm down and eventually get a draw or a win against Poland on the final day, and I think they'll get through.
Does Saudi Arabia come out of this group? I'm kind of thinking that Saudi Arabia comes out of this group. If they're
the team,
certainly if they're the team that played
right.
Argentina against Poland, they should get a similar
right.
result.
If they can get a draw of Poland, they'll be there, in my opinion, because Argentina will then play Poland on the final day, and it'll be pretty hard for them to come back. So, yeah, Saudi Arabia can get out of this group because the other two teams that you were expecting to be the co-favorites to finish second have not gotten off to great starts, either Poland or Mexico. So, I mean, unless that was a complete fluke, I think the Saudis have a genuine chance.
We'll see if the slipper sole fits, but if there is a Cinderella within this tournament, you gotta like Saudi Arabia's chances considering the result they already have in hand. Brazil also played yesterday, and they were electric in that second half. Serbia is a very good team.
Yeah.
They are loaded. When you have Luka Jovic and Kostic on your bench, not starting, you are absolutely loaded as a national team. Mitrovic, we've touted his ability as a hold-up play striker, as a huge talent. Those familiar with the Premier League do not sleep on Mitrovic. But he was totally erased by Thiago Silva and company. And a devastating injury to Neymar. Looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the group stage. Regardless of his fitness, they should easily get out of this group. But they look worthy of the favorites label that they had bestowed upon them by the odds makers, Chris.
Agreed. And for me with Brazil, I've always sort of had this theory that they could be just fine without Neymar. I know he's a star. I know he's sort of the headliner of this generation, the headliner of Brazil. When you do the movie poster, Neymar is on it. But they've got so many good players. They brought on Gabriel Martinelli, who's been great for Arsenal this season. They didn't even bring on Rodrigo, who's a really key player for Real Madrid. They've got so many players that could do the job of Neymar. As you said, to at least get out of this group. But I think even if it is a longer-term injury, and it looked a nasty one with the size of his ankle when he came up, it doesn't change my opinion that I think Brazil are going to win it and could win it. I think they could survive just fine without him. I know it's an emotional thing, and we saw it in 2014 when he got hurt before the semifinal against Germany. They completely capitulated. I think this team is better. It's got more of a foundation, and they have more options to replace Neymar. I think they'll be fine. They were amazing in that second half. And right now, Richarlison second for Brazil is the goal of the tournament. Check that out if you haven't seen it. Richarlison second for Brazil. Holy shit, what a piece of skill.
I don't mean to be soccer hipster, but for that type of goal, he had a lot of space to operate
in. That's true.
I think
that's true.
A lot of catch your breath. I know a lot of people want to be hyperbolic, calling it one of the greatest World Cup goals they've ever seen.
It's not that.
And depending on who's saying it, it may be true. But I don't know if that goal will live on. Certainly for Richarlison it will.
Sure.
But he had a lot of space to operate.
Now let me ask you a question. Was that goal or the Saudi Arabia second goal a better goal? Because I saw yesterday a video, best goals of the tournament so far. That's the other contender. You have to carry a little bit of significance,
right? I'm not going to apply the emotion of it.
Yeah.
I would still say Richarlison. Yeah. I don't want to come away like I'm shitting on the goal. I guess I am. It's probably goal of the tournament, but I don't know if it'll live on.
That's fair.
This isn't Van Persie.
Yeah.
I think he just had a crazy amount of space, and Serbia needs to learn how to address that. Believe it or not, I still like Serbia to get out of this group.
Okay.
I had them before the tournament advancing out of the group.
You can't use the result against Brazil to knock him down.
It's a really good team.
To play Switzerland and Cameroon, who weren't sensational in their opening game. So if you believe in them, you can stick through it.
Yeah, kind of a weird tournament for the African nations. I guess I thought that they might be in a spot where they could impress. We've seen some tournaments where it's kind of all or nothing for the African nations. Sometimes you earmark, oh, this is a big African nations international tournament. And for whatever reason, we aren't really seeing that quality from an African side. Maybe the injury to Sadio Mane has something to do with that, because Senegal, especially with today's result, you might pick them to get out of the group and maybe be one of these underdogs that can do something once we get to the knockout stages. But I'm really having a difficult time trying to find the class right now that has a true, genuine chance to make a run to, say, maybe the quarterfinal.
And the thing is that most of the African countries have sort of a player at every level. You can pick out, you know, Mendy for Senegal, and even, Idrissa Gueye, who's played for Paris Saint-Germain.
For Ghana, we know who it is. It's been the same guy for 20 years.
Right, it's Andre Ayew. Andre Ayew, death taxes in Andre Ayew for Ghana. But even Ghana, right? They got Thomas Partey in the middle. They've got some players, and Yaki Williams up top. Some players that play at a really high level, but it's always about the collective, and how do they get that collective talent to work, and sometimes it doesn't. Senegal probably would be the favorite right now to at least get out of the group. All they got to do is beat Ecuador, which is not going to be an easy game, but at least a manageable one where Senegal have a chance to get through. But otherwise, it's been tough matchups, to be fair, but also not a lot of impressive performances from the African teams.
All right, final thoughts for this U.S. performance from today and a treetop view. on the next round. I'm going to pin you down for a prediction.
Yeah.
Does the U.S., considering what we saw today, have enough to scratch through that very difficult Iranian defense and get the result required to advance to the knockout stages?
Yes, I do. I think the U.S. is going to do it. I think they've put in impressive enough performances to engender belief. You believe in this team a little bit right now. I know it could be difficult based off how they entered the World Cup and how it wasn't always impressive during qualifying.
Come on, we're talking about a team that sits on 2 points.
I know, but I've liked what I've seen for most of it. And it was a tough game today against England. I think they should have won it, but I think they have enough to where they can win again on Monday. Or is it Wednesday? When is the game?
The game's on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. Right. So I think the U.S. have enough to get through that game against Iran. They've been impressive enough for me going forward. The game will take a different shape. I think this U.S. team can do it. If we're asking historical precedent, 98, 06, or 2010, to me, this is 2010. This is winning on the final day leaving it late. Leaving it late. It's going to be nervy, but the U.S. is going to do it.
I don't want to sweat through 2010 all over again. And I think that while Algeria was a good side that year, Iran's better. Are they going to be galvanized from this result? They had every excuse in the book to totally check out on this. And if you read the reports, some nasty things happened in the sands with Iranian supporters trying to make political statements given the situation that they have over there. This unit is galvanized right now. Do they use this as something to take them on? There are geopolitical ramifications.
Right. They're playing America.
Yeah.
Right. And that means a lot. A lot of the situation in Iran, not to get overly political, but it's because of U.S. sanctions. Yeah. Right. Like the U.S. have a target on their back in this game. This means something more than just 90 minutes of soccer, we'll call it, because the U.S. Yeah. won today 0-0 against, or 0-0 against England. But this means more than just a game.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to be really tough, but I think they have enough. Do you think they have enough?
This was kind of the scenario that I feared.
Yeah.
Needing a result against Iran. I'm worried.
Yeah. And it's why you were shouting late in this England game, they deserve 3 points. They need all 3 points.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be a draw against Iran.
Okay.
I fear that it's going to be a draw against Iran. And I fear the reaction, too, that people are going to really read into. Yes, the U.S. should beat Iran, but there isn't this huge gulf between the teams.
It's not a given.
This isn't 98 if they end up not getting the result that they need. I think in terms of what it means for the sport here in the United States, it's certainly more devastating than 98. And 98 was pretty damn devastating.
Yeah.
98 was a stain on the U.S. men's national program. And it took them, I know they made a run in 02, but in terms of the eyes and expectations of those in their own country, it took them quite a while to build on that momentum. Think about where the game was after the 94 World Cup.
Yeah.
And Iran, coupled with just a really messy U.S. training camp in 98, really deflated a lot of the excitement that there was there. I am concerned about Iran. I rate them highly. I think they're tough. I think it's going to be difficult to get all 3 points. I'm going to be rooting my ass off for it. This is a weird statement game for Iran when you think about the football cliches, the bulletin board material. You have articles that aren't from the sports page in this one. There's a lot of inspiration that both teams can draw considering the opponent. It's fascinating. It's one of those moments that can only be given to us in international sport.
Yeah.
In a competition, corrupt as it may be, FIFA, and there, we're going to bring the world together through sport and football. They provide a showcase between mortal enemy countries with a lot on the line. Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Yeah. Right. I mean, the narrative of sport is usually about teams and club teams that maybe have cities that are feuding for whatever reason, but this is so much bigger on the basis of what's happening in the world right now. And in some ways, that's why people love international tournaments, right? Because it creates this sense of occasion where you're not just stepping onto the field as 11 players, you're stepping onto the field as a collective history against that other country. And sometimes, in this case, there are moments where that collective history means so much. And I think we're going to see that when the U.S. and Iran take the field. And ultimately, the size of the U.S.'s economic power, the size of the MLS clubs putting money into their academies, doesn't mean shit when these two teams step onto the field. It's ultimately a group of players that need to get the job done on the day, and Iran have enough. Going into this tournament, the ELO ratings for the other teams in the group besides England were the U.S. 23, Iran 24, and Wales 25. You can make an argument. These two teams are pretty similar considering their level of talent, and I think that portends for a pretty difficult game for the U.S.
So you're telling me razor-thin margin between the two teams, and one of those teams only needs a draw to get to the knockout stages.
And they're very good defensively.
And unfortunately, it is not the U.S., so a tall order for the U.S. This is not, we're just going to come in there with our briefcase, business trip, take care of business. The U.S. is going to have to draw inspiration from what they did today, learn that they can go at teams, even though the goal wasn't there for them. The buildup, the process was good. If they do that against Iran, they can get them in tricky spots. All it takes is one, I think.
Yeah.
It might only take one. Can they get the one, though? It'd be supremely disappointed if they go out from this tournament with just the one goal from Timothy Weah so early on.
And you remember that Algeria game in 2010. The Landon Donovan goal comes from a save that Tim Howard made on a free header from 4 yards out. It could have very easily gone the other way before Landon Donovan went and scored that goal. And ultimately, when you leave yourself to that small of a margin, you're putting yourself in a perilous position. And you're right. I'm not like 100% confident the U.S. can go out there and run things and score three goals. Like, getting goals is hard for this team. It was hard during qualifying. It's been hard at this World Cup, despite the fact the U.S. have played, in my view, very well. So, man, you sort of have that feeling of nerves from the first minute. You'd love to get an early goal just to calm things going.
The first goal will absolutely be the hardest. If they get out in front of Iran 1-0, you can pretty much write that game off. Because you'll open up that Iranian defense, and you might be able to pile on, take a few more from them. If it opens up early, U.S. 1-0, I think live odds for them to advance might be minus 800. Because you want to get in a situation where Iran feels like they have to press for a goal. Because then you can absolutely break down that organized back line. We've had a blast here at Bottle Blonde. I personally really enjoyed pushing people away from our broadcast position. I get up for that kind of shit. I don't like it. We're going to be out here on Tuesday for the U.S.-Iran game. Hope you'll join us, although there wasn't much room. I know there was a line outside the door and people
were turning people away by kickoff.
But we'll certainly be live with you, our Levitard Show audience and our YouTube audience. Thank you so much. I've learned that people that don't follow Levitard Show are following this. So please hit that subscribe button to get notifications for whenever YouTube.com/Levitard and Friends goes live. We will be with you throughout this tournament. We're going to be off this weekend for the group games and rally back on Monday for more Morally Abhorrent. For Chris Whittingham, I'm a very happy American, Mike Ryan Ruiz, and we'll be talking to you on Monday.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.